Welcome to Begin With Yes with Paul Boynton on Empower Radio, a show to help you create and embrace real personal change. You can overcome the challenges in front of you. You just begin with yes. Here's your host, Paul Boynton.
Hey, thank you, Brent. It's good to be back. We're so fortunate to be part of the Empower Radio family and grateful for your hospitality and grateful, too, to all the listeners who are tuning in now or will be tuning in later. Today, my guest is Jacob Norby, and we're going to be talking about the pre-release of his new book, which you can actually get now. It's called The Divine Arsonist, and I just ordered my copy last night, so can't wait to get it. Jacob, it's so good to have you with us today.
Paul, what an honor. I always love being on your show. And wow, yeah, when I got the call, I said, well, of course, just clear the calendar. I'm there.
That's what I love to hear. Maybe I should tell people a little bit about you. Jacob is an author, as you already know, a speaker, a entrepreneur, conscious entrepreneur, and a personal transformation mentor. He's published in several books, including Jack Canfield's Pearls of Wisdom, 30 Inspirational Ideas to Live Your Best Life Now, and also with Dr. Bernie Siegel in The Thoughts That Changed My Life. And his own new book is just out now called The Divine Arsonist. It's called A Tale of Awakening, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, and you'll find out about his Facebook page and his e-magazine site and all kinds of stuff. His personal motto is the greatest gift you can offer the world is to awaken and walk in love. He has a great passion for helping others give birth to new purposes in their life, too. Jacob, it's so good to be talking to you again. How are things in your part of the world?
Well, they're wonderful. I'm still in Austin, Texas, and we've had a mild winter, so it's been just lovely down here. How about up there?
We've had a really mild winter. Everyone now is thinking March is going to be a terrible month because we've actually had almost no snow, wow. Many spring-like days, and it's just not like New Hampshire, so it's not good for the people that want to go snowshoeing or skiing, but for people like me, I'm enjoying the kind of a mild winter. Now, let's talk about the book because you've been working on this for a while, and now I just found out that you can actually order the book now. It's in a pre-release, and then it's going to be available more widely shortly. But how are you feeling about bringing this project to a close?
Well, yeah, Paul, I mean, you're an author as well, so you know what it feels like to write a book. And this one is such a deep personal story of mine. It's fiction, but it's a very personal story. And so it's interesting to let it go out into the world. Part of me wants to keep working it and reworking it. And in fact, I got it back from my editor, read it, and thought, you know, I really should rewrite parts of this. And I finally got nudged. No, it's just time to let this one grow up and leave home and go make its way in the world on its own.
I know what you speak of because it's so hard to ever be done with it. I can remember in the days, and maybe you can too, before word processing, when if you wanted to redo it, you had to retype it. And so the power of, I guess, technology has made it almost impossible to ever be finished with anything that you're writing. So good for you for finally saying it's done and you can just keep writing and moving on. But do you feel like, do you feel like after having invested so much time, do you feel some relief in having it finally done, or do you wish you could do one more rewrite?
Well, you know, Paul, it's interesting because great question. I grew up reading the classics and, you know, many of them and Hemingway and Dickens and all these ones. And so as I'm writing this book, I've had the voice of the classics, the voice of these authors whispering in my head, and their style and all this stuff. And I just admired these authors so much. And so obviously writing something like this, there's this self-questioning, like, is this really any good at all? And I finally have come to the point with this one where I realized this really isn't a novel in that sense. It's a personal journey book. It does tell a story and it's engaging in that way. But I guess there's definitely relief. And I think honestly, Paul, it's somewhat like raising children. I have a teenage boy who'll be 15 soon, and twins who will be 11 soon. And with this book, I think it might be kind of like raising teenagers. At a certain point, you just get tired of them and want them to leave home.
That's true. And once you put it out into the world, then in some ways, it's no longer yours. And everybody's experience in reading it is sort of unique to that person. And it's, I think, as you probably already know, as you begin to get feedback from people who are reading your book, that everyone's experience of it is going to be unique and different. And there are going to be parts that resonate with somebody and other parts that resonate with somebody else. And it's always fun to chat with people and see how the book is affecting or impacting them. And it's pretty unpredictable. At least that's been my experience.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about that, actually, Paul. I mean, I know you've had – how long has your book been out, actually?
My book has been out for a couple of years. And the reason I brought that up is I was meeting with somebody yesterday about speaking to their group, and it's a group of cancer survivors, and they're putting together a series of workshops, and they felt that – Begin With Yes addressed one part of how to cope with cancer, which is having a positive attitude and continuing to move forward and take steps even during difficult times. And she said to me that she thought the basic theme of my book was being resilient. And that was the first person that had ever, articulated that. So it's just, it just sort of impressed me that it becomes a unique journey for everybody that's reading it, as well.
Yeah. Have you, I was getting ready to start asking you questions because I'm used to doing the interview. I'll turn the mic back over to you.
All right. That's fair enough. Wait, you know, I know that this book is a book of fiction, but woven into that is a lot of your own personal journey. And because of that, would you mind giving us a little bit of your backstory?
Yeah, Paul. And honestly, It is a novel, but it goes beyond it. It turns into a question of life itself. You know, the divine arsonist. The idea there is that we have life show up, and whether we want to call it life, or we want to call it God, or we want to call it spirit, or whatever we want to call it, the fact is, reality shows up and gives us the opportunity to see beyond what we believe, see beyond what our previous experience has been. And we have a choice then. We either take the next step with life and experience more life, or we start curling up and trying to keep life out. And so that was really my personal experience. And I tell the story, Paul, throughout the book of, you know, various characters show up and my main character gets to talk, you know, back and forth about, you know, what he's been up to and all that in his childhood a little bit. But in every step along the way, he discovers that he's going to have his beliefs challenged about himself, about the world, about what's important. And the question always comes down to, will I surrender to the next step in life or not? Will I allow life to carry me forward? And that's been my personal journey, Paul, from being raised as a fundamentalist Christian kid with all this very, very tightly woven network of beliefs that really ruled and constricted my life in a lot of ways, to eventually let that sort of burn down, if you will, and step into some different kinds of freedom, and then move into business and into that whole world of belief. And then, you know, having some of that, get burnt down around me as well and step forward into yet another part of life. That's been one of the most beautiful and powerful lessons, I've come upon, is that life goes on.
How difficult is it to, and I guess I'm going back to probably going back a ways with your Christian, I guess, upbringing, and how difficult was it to let go of some of that? And did you let go of all of it or some of it?
It was like Paul, the way I grew up was so, most people who grow up, you know, in a Christian environment of some kind, you know, they have certain beliefs and they have a certain experience of it. But most folks in the modern age, you know, when it comes right down to it, it's relatively, it can be relatively surface. Let's just put it that way, in terms of how it affects everyday, day-to-day life and how much different people are from the rest of the world. In my experience, we were very different. We looked different. We behaved differently, down to the very fine details of life. And so, not unlike being Amish, for example, or one of those really cloistered groups, that was my experience of the world and of God and of other people. And so we actually believe that, hey, anybody who's not part of our group, we call them the world, and we really don't associate with them. And so, yeah, it was like literally stepping into a whole different planet when I grew up and left home and eventually made my way out into the world.
I mean, was that a process, or was it a big leap?
For me, I was the oldest kid of six, and for me, it was a process. I was really interested in keeping my parents pleased and my folks I'd always grown up with pleased, Paul. And so, you know, I took one step at a time. I kind of, and I talk about this in the book, I became this secret agent, kind of sneaking around and examining different beliefs and ideas. And I would read Wayne Dyer and Deepak Chopra and different ones, and I'd come back and just my mind would be blown, and I had no idea. Okay, what am I going to do with this now? mm-hmm. Yeah.
And can you look back on, at what point, and this may be a poor choice of words, but I'm just going to put it out there, but at what point did you feel like you were free of your upbringing in a healthy way?
Yeah, great questions. I mean, yeah, I feel the insight behind the question, Paul, because you've no doubt talked with a lot of people who go through that period of pain and the resistance and anger that comes when we start go away from something that no longer serves.
And also guilt. Don't you think guilt is part of it? Is that you feel like that there's something that you shouldn't be doing by letting go?
Without any question. And yeah. Paul, it's fear of isolation. I mean, when we're part of something, whatever it is, whether it's a career religion in my case, these things are very, they have their own powerful center of gravity. And so when we start to move away from them, when our inner voice says, hey, it's time to take the next step with life, and this is going to lead you away from the known into the unknown. Then yeah, there's certainly a sense of guilt. I knew for sure that I was going to let a lot of people down. And that terrified me, Paul.
Yeah. Were you through that sort of letting go before you had your own children?
No, I married young. I was 20 and my wife was 18 by a month. We had children, three years later. And so, yeah, when I was 25, Paul, is when things really started to shift. And I just kind of knew for sure at that point. I'd been having questions for a long time, but I knew for sure that I had to go a different direction, started to take steps to get free of that. And so, yeah, the next several years were painful. I talk about this in the book quite a bit, actually. The next several years were painful and confusing, Paul. And then there came a point, and this is kind of the pivotal spot in the book. There came a point when I was, this has been years now, after I had left the church that I grew up in and had just sort of been out there making my way in the world and in business and all that. And I hired a young man. He came to work for me. And about 6 months later, he said, hey, I'd like to invite you to go to this meditation retreat with me way up in the mountains of Idaho. And I said, well, interesting. You know, I'd been reading some of the popular spiritual literature and had been poking around a bit with meditation, but not much. And I went with him. I said, okay, we'll do this. And it was going to cost a little money. It was going to take a few days. And, you know, closer I came to it, Paul, the more I started to be concerned that, oh, well, you know, the business needs me. I really shouldn't take the time and I shouldn't spend the money. But there was this deep knowing, I've got to go do this. And I didn't know why. He didn't tell me anything about it. Well, we got there, Paul. And we got there and it turned out to be a shamanic retreat. And I had never experienced anything like that. I didn't know what it meant. Mm-hmm. And you know, I actually ran into a friend of mine over the weekend, Paul, who has had a near-death experience, actually two or three of them in his life, and he wrote this beautiful book and he's on tour right now. And he was here in Austin and with a group of people, and I went down just to meet him and see him. And so I was in this group, and there's all these folks who have had near-death experiences, and they actually get together to support each other because what they've experienced and the messages they feel and the purpose they feel in life sometimes is so hard to explain that they just need to talk to other people who've had the experience. And in my world, that was just about that dramatic to have an experience that was so other from what I had ever been involved in before. And I wasn't looking for it on a conscious level, Paul, but there was, that was this break. That was an experience in my body and beyond the mind of a place which we all have inside of us, which is free and only loving and full of light and full of purpose. And there is nothing personal in that space. There is nothing that weighs us down. I had never felt that before. All my life had been restricted by guilt and by rules and conformity, Paul, and all these different things. And so that was the first time in my life that I'd ever had the experience. And so that for me was that divine arsonist, that cosmic break that said, let me just give you a peek into what a different reality feels like.
It's, you know, for the first time, and you and I've known each other for quite a while, and I've known about your book for a good long time, but for the first time, I now understand the title of the book, and I appreciate you sharing that. I'm wondering, and everybody has a very unique story, and yet there are some common themes, and that's why books like the book that you've written will resonate with so many people. And what is it, do you think, that we all have in common, Jacob? I mean, your story, your upbringing is different than mine. I could tell you my story, and it would be, from a factual standpoint, quite different from yours. Mm-hmm. But you and I know you and I have more in common than not. And so what do you think, you know, can you talk a little bit about what that might be?
Paul, the world has in common a river of experience and thought, which has followed a general track, a general direction since the beginning of time, since the beginning of history and memory. And that has been filled with a search for predictability, for certainty, for love. And we try to protect ourselves from the unknown. We try to make sure that we're going to be taken care of and that we're going to feel good. You know, all these things. We do so many things to try to make sure those things happen. And from my experience, because we are born and raised facing one direction, we all have what I call the shadow wolf, these questions which follow us through life, which we don't really want to turn and face. But when we do, when we actually turn the other direction, Paul, and reverse the train, the river of thought and experience, when we're actually willing to stop running and turn around and let the inevitable, let the unknown catch us, we discover that it's no wolf, it's no monster at all. It's reality. And from there, we can find a place of peace that really, when we're just following the general train of misery and ego pursuits and all of that stuff, we're just going to keep getting more of what all of us have gotten. And right, the stories are literally endless, but the overall experience is very similar.
You know, I was reminded as you were talking about a great little book that I read a long time ago, I think by Alan Watts. It was called The Wisdom of Insecurity. Mm. And the basic message was that until you get that there is no such thing as security, you won't feel secure. And that once you get that, it was like one of those sort of cosmic jokes that that I always thought was pretty wonderful. I think that some people find themselves at places at different times in their life. Some people go through what you're talking about when they're much younger. Other people go through it when they're much older. And then some people never, at least in this lifetime, do that work. What happened? Can you, looking back, have a sense for what was going on that allowed you to take that leap into the unknown?
Paul, I don't have any dogma. You know, that's one thing. When I left my own church background and, you know, started into other things, I discovered that every step we take wants to have its own dogma. And so I've kind of lost, even in the spiritual community, such beautiful teachings and all these things, I find that it's easy to start forming dogma again. So I don't have dogma exactly about, you know, reincarnation or how that all works, but I do have a sense that the soul has a journey. It has its own progress, and it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And whether we journey here over and over again, which I think is highly possible, it feels to me that when it's our time to awaken and dream in other ways, as one writer said, that we're going to, and it becomes inevitable. And I think, Paul, here's what I would say. I think that those of us who get that inner call, we hear the call, the gong. As you read the book, there's this inner gong that it does talk to, you know, you feel the resonance internally. When we hear that call and it says, it's time to wake up, it's time to shift, it's time to move in a different direction. If we hear that and we know it, but we're too afraid, we just won't quite take the step, I feel like we make a choice to plunge ourselves back into unconsciousness, and we probably end up stunting, you know, that particular part of our soul's path, if you will, or growth. And so from my perspective, it's a very natural process. And I think, you know, I feel that life or soul or God or whatever, it brings us back to that point of awakening as often as necessary to the time when we actually open ourselves up to the possibility of something new.
You know, that sounds kind of hopeful and optimistic in that it's a journey that seems somewhat inevitable that everyone at some point will take. I mean, do you believe that that's possible?
Paul, I don't. That's yes. In fact, in one of the chapters of the book here, there's one of the divine helpers who showed up, tells my main character the myth of the tree of life. And as I wrote that, I didn't realize. And then I went poking around later after I wrote it and discovered all this amazing deep tradition around the tree of life. And I really had no idea what I was writing. But anyway, he talks about the tree of life and he's like, you got to understand that life is always seeking to express more of itself. Nothing is the end of the world, not even the end of the world. So a single lifetime, Paul, what's happened to me is that I've come to have a perspective on a single lifetime that it's lovely and it's perfect and it's amazing. And we're here to express and give birth to the best that lies within as much as we possibly can. But I've come to see that a single lifetime by itself, it's just a flicker. It's just a single blink in this amazing space of eternity. And so, yeah, I don't have any fear whatsoever that and the other thing that's really been strong in me since these experiences have happened, Paul, is that everything we see has intelligence, has life, and it may be at a lower, denser intelligence or a higher intelligence. And mankind, humankind, has this amazing place where we are this blend of the conscious and the unconscious. And we have this body, but we have the capacity for self-awareness and for questioning and doubting. So the very fact that we doubt and question, the very fact that we seek for love, the very fact that we wonder, who am I? That's very godlike. That's very divine. And so we have this place in creation where we're actually helping to transmute consciousness and unfold, from my perspective, unfold evolution. We're asked to unfold it consciously.
Jacob, do you? I love talking with you, and just being with you on the phone is always moving to me and inspirational. But I'm wondering, I'm wondering, how do you go back and forth between day to day realities and what, for lack of a better word, I'll call the real world, and the world that you're now sort of co-creating with other people? Do you have any, is the movement between, you know, the day-to-day realities and some of the things you and I have been talking about today difficult or not so difficult?
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a wonderful question. And as Paul is so perfect. I think that is so perfect because we can, oh, isn't that great? We can read the words of of Krishna and Buddha and Jesus Christ and all these masters and amazing people and amazing current teachers today. And we can have inspirations ourselves that just are so resplendent that it makes the eyes of our soul hurt. And then we come back and our kids have their socks all over the floor and the cat just puked on the kitchen. You know, I mean, yes, of course it's challenging.
Yeah. And maybe what you're doing right now, laughing about it, is the almost the best thing that we can do, is to see the humor in the space in between.
Well, yeah, and Paul, you know, the the story of the book here, toward the end, what's interesting is, okay, so this man who has my name, you know, tired businessman, goes up to his cabin on a weekend. He just says, I just got to get away. He didn't even know why, but he had this inner sense, I've got to go and take a break. While he's there, this guy shows up by the campfire and claims to be a divine helper who wants to take him on this journey of discovery, and has some things to talk to him about, the way the world is and the way the end of the world is, or whatever. You know, it's sort of some mysterious hints there. And he says, you have a week, and when you need, it's, you know, you got a week. If you come back here a week from now, then you're going to take the trip with me. If you don't, that's fine. You're just going to go back to your life and you're going to miss a big opportunity for awakening and for change. But it's really totally up to you. So the guy has to go back home and make that decision. Well, so throughout the book, Paul, he has this sense that he's going to be delivered this amazing message for the world, and he's going to have something really to share that's going to, you know, he needs to go out and start a campaign and really, you know, become the next great teacher or something. Mm-hmm. And what he discovers right at the end, after all these amazing experiences and all this teaching and the journey that he takes, what he discovers at the end is that the way we change the world is by taking that inner journey and changing ourselves. And he's sent back to the world to go live in real life. And he tells his helpers, I don't know what you're talking about. I thought I was supposed to go back and have this big mission and purpose. And they said, oh, you do. Your purpose is to go back and love people and, you know, feed the hungry and enjoy your life and love your wife and kids. And that's your purpose. And he said, oh, okay. And so there we are, Paul. And that is the purpose, right?
Yeah. I know that we're getting close to the end of this show, but we have a little bit of time left, but before we forget, how can people find you and find your book and so forth? So what's the best way to track you down?
So if you go to yourawakenedself.com,
okay,
that's, I mean, cause you know, the pre-release portion is going to come and go, Paul. And we'll come back out at some point, but that's where I'd really love to connect with people is yourawakenedself.com. If they go to, there's a tab that says About Jacob. And then if they just kind of let that menu item pull down, there's a thing that says Books, and that'll take them. If they want to jump on and grab a pre-release copy for the next little bit, I'm offering a few of those up right now. So yeah, that would be the best way, the yourawakenedself.com. And by the way, I hope I can entice you, Paul, to come and let me interview you and share you with my audience as well. That'd be so wonderful.
Yeah, of course. Any time. So can they find you on Facebook too, Jacob?
Yeah, I'm on facebook.com/Jacob Nordby. That's NORD like David, B like boy, Y.
Okay. And so I think after people have listened to this show, they're going to be very intrigued. And I want to ask you a question that may put you on the spot a little bit. But this process of growing and learning, now that your book is over and you've written the last chapter and you have gone out into the world, is the journey pretty much over for you? I mean, have you learned everything you need to learn? Or is there going to be another book?
All right. So the way to answer that is this. This is the author's postscript, which I wrote a year after I'd finished the first draft, Paul.
All right.
This book tells the story of a journey. Like all stories and all journeys, it has a beginning and an ending. At the end of something is the birth of something else, in this case, more life. Alfred Korzybski famously said, "The map is not the territory." During and since the writing of this book, I've been invited by life to continue re-seeing, re-experiencing, and relearning. With each new step along the path, I find myself less dependent on old maps and much more interested in the journey itself. So I recommend that you burn this book and set out upon your own expedition of inner journey.
So everybody's got to, I mean, they can read your book and learn a lot, but they've got to do their own journey. They can't live through you and your journey, right?
As do I. The journey continues.
That is awesome. Hey, Jacob, I'm so sorry that we're out of time, but this has been awesome, as always, chatting with you. And I'll definitely come and be interviewed by you and have you back again. Good luck with your book. I can't wait to get my copy, and we'll talk again real soon.
Thank you so much, Paul. Wonderful to be here.
Thanks, Jake. Well, thanks to Brent and Bob and all the good people at Empower Radio. Thank you for listening. Come back next week because I will be looking for you. Have a great day.